This is one of those really weird, bleedingly obvious, common sense types of observations or recommendations or ideas that you'd think, yeah, okay, yeah, we know that, we should. But no matter how often we've talked about it, genuinely, people, you've still got this issue, this gap between my role as a teacher and my role as a learner.
And welcome back, everyone, to Modern Learners Podcast number 19, where we're talking about teachers and learners and cheaters. Not all in one sentence there, but that's definitely the hot topic for tonight's discussion between myself, Will Richardson, and my colleague Bruce Dixon over in Australia. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. We're having a real fun time doing these podcasts, and we actually have a couple more queued up with some other people, so you can stop listening to the two of us kind of droning on about life and learning. But at any rate, we're back for one more week this week, and just want to remind you that if you have any comments or feedback, we have a SpeakPipe app on our site, on the blog site, that goes along with this post. You can head over to iTunes and give us a rating and a review, which we would really, really appreciate. We've got 5 stars over there right now. And please don't forget to join us in other conversations online. We're at change.school, and we're at modernlearners.com, and we're at Facebook with our Facebook Change Leaders group, and also at Modern Learners News on Facebook. So lots of different places where you can interact and you can get in touch with us, and we would love to have those conversations with you anytime you like. But for now, enjoy this episode where we talk a little bit about how technology is beginning now to seriously challenge our definitions of cheating and a whole bunch of other stuff as well. Hope you enjoy it, and thanks again for listening. So how are you, mate?
I'm very good, mate. Very good.
You're working off your mobile.
Yeah, no, that's right. No, that's good. It's good to be back home after the trip. But reflecting back on, I guess, a lot of what we talked about, but most importantly, what we saw and our observations over there. So it was an interesting time. I guess when you get 14,000 people together in one place, you get a diversity of opinion, you meet a lot of good people, and you have a lot of good conversations, and that's the main part of it all, isn't it?
Yeah, and so we did a little bit of an ISTE wrap last week, and we actually got a SpeakPipe question, and I'm not sure how we're going to do this with the Facebook Live thing. We'll just have to be honest. I'll have to edit this part out, I think, because what we'll do is we'll drop Michael's audio into the podcast. See, this is where it gets really complicated, right? And this is where...
Come on.
This is where you have to hack it, right? Okay, so what we're going to do is we're gonna tell you what Michael Valentine from Perth said, and then if you listen to the podcast, if you really have no life, you listen to the podcast after you watch this video, which, by the way, thank you so much for coming to watch this video after the fact.
We really appreciate you staying there that long.
Really do appreciate it. But anyway, so Michael Valentine, who is a friend of yours, or an acquaintance of yours, at least, out in
Perth. He's a leader at Hale School.
There we go. He left us a SpeakPipe question, which I thought was pretty interesting, because basically what Michael asked was, and he was reflecting on his own experience at ISTE in Atlanta a few years ago. And basically the gist of his question was that he thought it would be interesting for vendors not to provide solutions, but wouldn't it be cool if they could provide challenges for the teachers and for the educators who were attending those big conferences and who were on the vendor floor.
Hi, Bruce. Hi, Will. Mike Valentine from Perth, Australia. I attended Atlanta ISTE, and I too recognised that the main focus of the vendor force seemed to be how to make traditional teaching practices easier and more efficient. I think we need to change the perspective rather than trying to change industry. That'll change if we change the perspective of the teachers stalking the vendor floor each year. And I think those teachers, somehow we need to be able to agree on a set of challenges. We need a worldwide set of challenges. And I think Michael Fullan nailed that when he spoke about the fact that schools are being buffeted by three forces. We seem to be responding to one of those forces, which is technology, but we're not taking into account the other two forces he identified. The second force was the fact that we all agree that we need to teach better and teach differently in the 21st century. Things have changed, and our students need to be collaborative and connected and to be better placed as citizens in the 21st century. Then, of course, there's this third force he identified, which is change energy. And I'm paraphrasing him to suit my needs, but teachers love the fact that they can sit down and work together to design units of work that suit the needs of their students. We're losing that. We're really losing that from the job, and it frightens lots of us. So how do we change the perspective of the teachers that go into conferences like ISTE and force industry to rethink, and rather than provide solutions, provide us with challenges?
So I thought that was really an interesting kind of twist on it. And I was thinking a little bit about what a challenge might look like if vendors came in with challenges. And I think automatically it speaks to a more learning context than it does a teaching context if they did that, right?
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, and it was a good question, because I'm sure that vendors or people in the commercial world who may be listening to our podcast, as well as educators and leaders, may say to themselves, are you kidding yourselves? I mean, we're out there to sell stuff, and we're trying to make a business run and make a profit. And I guess the point we're trying to make is, you can have your cake and you can eat it too. I mean, there's no reason why you just can't change your perspective from, this, I guess, fairly crass delivering, solutions at all costs, which is what Michael refers to, one which is a little bit more challenging and asks a lot more of the people who are coming to the exhibition.
It speaks to, again, what Gary was talking about on that kind of crazy ISTE Live thing we did, from San Antonio or what he talks about. Also, Gary Steger talks about a lot, and that is kind of just raising the bar and understanding the potential and the real kind of opportunity to do complex work with technology. And we're not going to go into another riff on ISTE or on vendor floors, here, because we kind of did that last week. But I do agree with you. I think we need to look at both what happens in classrooms, but also look at ourselves as learners and really think about that complexity for us as well. Now, can you hear my dog barking in the background there?
It's a bit. It sort of gives us a bit of environmental impact.
This is one of those small Facebook Live moments,
That's right.
Where you're sitting here going, "Gee, I wonder how the audio sounds," and then my dog
loud.
All right, it's not that bad.
So, just another thing, it would be good for people who have slept overnight and are watching this on Facebook, or if you're watching the recording, maybe to pass some comments on Michael's thoughts on that and the question about how can we change the presentation or the focus on exhibition floors so that, maybe it helps, be more challenging and offers more in terms of real learning for people who are wandering through there.
And we're just not, or at least I'm not astute enough to understand, or not to understand, I can understand it, but to kind of be looking at Facebook right now and taking those live questions and trying to fold them into the podcast or into this into this session as well. So if you want to try doing that, Bruce, you go for it. But right now I'm no, but so, and that conversation actually reminded me. So yesterday, I don't know if you saw, but I went on a sat rant. A Saturday rant on Twitter. Yep. I don't know if you saw this.
No, I didn't, mate. No offense.
Yeah, probably not. No, you were wishing your daughter a safe trip yesterday, heading
to Milan. That's right.
Heading away for a year, and we won't even talk about where my daughter is right now. But I just went into a little bit of a rant again about this idea that so much of what we talk about in terms of change in education is teacher focused. And this idea again, that teachers don't, in these, most of these conversations, don't really look at themselves as learners, think of themselves as learners first. And that it really is about becoming better teachers rather than creating conditions under which kids can learn. And I know we talk about this all the time, and this is not new to anybody who's been listening to our podcast or visiting Modern Learners or Change School or any of that stuff, which, by the way, just so you know, I'm wearing that Change School t-shirt.
Hey, nice t-shirt.
All you podcast listeners can be all envious now because I'm showing my Change School shirt. But,
just to be wearing a Change School
shirt. Yeah, well, you're inside. but no, seriously, we need to, I think, keep pushing that conversation on learning and keep moving it away from teaching. And a lot of people don't like that, you know? I had some interesting, just real fast, I had some interesting tweets coming back at me about that, you know, and saying that, you know, you have to have teachers and teachers are really important and teaching is really important. I'm not saying that they're not and that there aren't moments that we should be teaching, but it's just interesting once again to engage people in that conversation because it's weird that that's thinking differently, you know, that we starting at the point of learners is different from or difficult from starting at the point of teachers.
Tis interesting. It's a great point. And I agree with you. I mean, listeners to the podcast or on Facebook will probably be saying to themselves, here they go again. But but here's the interesting point. This is one of those really weird, bleedingly obvious, common sense types of observations or recommendations or ideas that you'd think, yeah, okay, yeah, we know that we should, but no matter how often we've talked about it, genuinely, people, you've still got this issue, this gap between my role as a teacher and my role as a learner. And yeah, it struck me, and I'm not going to certainly name the person, but as you know, we've had some phenomenally deep conversations in this cohort of Change School over the last few weeks. I've walked away. I think both of us have walked away and gone, really, wow, what happened? What happened through that hour of discussion? And we had one about a week ago. And at the end of it, a superintendent, we went into a breakout room, actually. We were in a breakout room and we were talking about, you know, what was the impact of what we were doing. And he just turned to everyone else in the room. There were about four of us in the room. And he said, all of a sudden, I realize we are all learners. And I looked at him and he went, yeah, no, I know. I know you guys have been saying this forever. He said, and I feel really bad that I've taken for granted that I am a learner and that my faculty are. But he said, we're not. We firstly see ourselves as teachers, and the learning happens to the people we're working with. And genuinely, most of us don't see our role as learners anywhere near as important as it should be. And I thought it was incredible. I mean, it was a wonderful, it's a very open and transparent comment to make, but a really valuable one.
And we do have a topic that we want to talk about here tonight, or this morning. But one of the questions that I asked in that little Twitter rant was, what freedoms do we as adults have as learners that kids in our classrooms don't? And I hadn't really thought about that question before very much, but that's it. You know, as I was typing it out, actually, I was just like, that really is an interesting question, because that does force us to look at our own learning and the way that we learn, the conditions under which we learn, the freedoms that we have to learn, which sounds like a great book title, and basically, and then look at that and compare that to the conditions we set up for kids. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that neither of us is suggesting that we just make it all free reign and, you know, kids can just go run and do whatever they want. I think we should have them do more of that. But I just think we need to bring a lens of learning in our own lives into our roles as teachers, into classrooms, much, much more than we currently do.
So that gives us a segue into the topic that we were going to talk on today. And that was, therefore, you know, what should we be focused on with the learning with our young people, with our kids? And the topic, of course, comes from a great article in Wired magazine, the details and links to which we'll post in the Facebook page and under the podcast posting. And it talks about the role of AI, artificial intelligence, and most specifically talks about the teaching of mathematics. And it specifically refers to the use of Wolfram Alpha. Listeners and viewers may or may not be familiar with. But again, it comes back to this point about, you know, to what extent are we genuinely reflecting and thinking about the way that we're using new technologies to teach the way we always taught, rather than thinking about new ways of going about it. And I think you know this, the question I've always asked people is, how should we be teaching mathematics in a digitally rich world?
And the answer is certainly not the same way we taught it with pencil and paper, yet we are. And, right. you know, when I say to people, how do you know, what technologies or how do you use technologies in your teaching of mathematics, you know, after we get rid of spreadsheets and some other pretty, you know, spreadsheets are brilliant. I love spreadsheets. But our thinking around the teaching of mathematics is still at a very, very low level when you're committing to using technology powerfully. And Wolfram Alpha confronts you with that.
I think the freak out in this article is from educators who are saying that kids using Wolfram Alpha are cheating.
Yep.
That they shouldn't be able to go out and use the technologies that they carry in around with them to go and solve problems that are being asked of them by schools, that they should have to be remembering it in some way, or that they should have to be kind of pulling it up from their, you know, from their brains when they have all these technologies that are available. And Wolfram Alpha is amazing. I mean, it is, you know, if you haven't checked it out, please do check it out and play with it a little bit. But, you know, the idea to me that using Wolfram Alpha or using PhotoMath even, which is a app that basically you can take a picture of an equation in a book somewhere or write out an equation, take a picture of it, and it'll solve it for you. I mean, the idea that that's cheating is interesting to me because, as you said, the relationship between this and the conversation we just had is because it's only cheating if you're looking at it from a teaching standpoint. It's not cheating if you look at it from a learning standpoint.
Exactly.
It's absolutely not. I mean, how you would, if anyone told you as an adult that you couldn't go use those tools to solve those types of problems, you'd be going like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
We are, again, using that lens of teaching when we consider all of these types of applications and tools and technologies that are out there. And that's where the friction is, I think.
And you're dead right. And I think we don't want to harp on mathematics, but we actually do, because I think we talk about a whole lot of areas when we have these discussions. And I know, you know, when people get together and talk about the use of technologies, they range across a whole lot of areas. But I think it's good if you focus on mathematics, it's one of those, you know, areas that everyone wants to be competent in. And so the first thing you're going to say was, if you're going to let our kids, you know, go online, what are they going to do if they have to solve a problem and they don't have a computer or a phone? And I mean, you know, I understand that parents would have that concern because they haven't got any context. They haven't had someone talk to them about how we should be thinking in this modern world and what learning should look like. But a bit of background for people who don't know a little bit about the Wolframs. They're interesting brothers. There's Stephen and Conrad. And those of you who have worked with us before or heard us before will know we've often mentioned Conrad Wolfram. Conrad has an excellent TED talk, which again we'll put the link to with this. And it's stunning. He talks about the same thinking, that why is it that we're wasting our time having kids go through mechanical mathematics, as he calls it, you know, hand calculating, he calls it, when that isn't mathematics, that's calculating, that's computing, and a computer does that better, faster than we ever could.
Right.
And I was stunned.
What was that called again?
A computer.
Just wanted to make sure I got that right. A computer. Okay, go ahead. I got it.
And the part that I did not know was that Stephen Wolfram, who by most people's measure is one of the world's great, literally one of the world's greatest mathematicians, and I read from the article here, can't do long division and didn't learn his times tables until he was 40.
Isn't that
now,
wild?
He wrote a book.
Why did you even learn him at that point, you know?
Yeah, I know. So was there any point learning them then? Now, right. he wrote a book called A New Kind of Science. I was looking for it. I actually have it here. It is, in all fairness, literally something good to look at. I've probably read three chapters of it, and that's going to take me 2 years to think about. But he literally wrote a book about a new kind of science. But he's recognized around the world. He's in the Hawking category in terms of, right. of his capacity. This is a man and his brother who now are committed to trying to help us rethink the way we look at mathematics, rethink the way we learn mathematics, and rethink the way we are teaching mathematics. And therefore, it does provide, it challenges us to think profoundly about how we are using the technology with young people to build deep concepts, deep understanding about difficult, complex ideas and concepts in mathematics. And we're not going to do it by giving them trivial calculations to do, which a computer will do better.
So I think what we're saying is that we don't think Wolfram Alpha is cheating, number one. Yep. Math is probably, of all the subjects, the easiest to cheat at, if we're going to define it like that.
Yep.
Look, this isn't just about math. I mean, you know, it's more about the type of content, the type of teaching, learning that is happening in classrooms. I won't say who my source is, but I have it on a well-informed source that kids are cheating in school.
No.
I know this might be a shock to everybody.
No.
And they are cheating fairly regularly and cheating fairly widely. And it's not seen as this big ethical, you know, problem for them. It's seen as a response to, I don't really feel like doing this work. It's really boring and not very engaging to me. I don't know why I need to do it. So, you know, let's just figure out a different way of just getting through it. It goes to that whole idea of the game of school and how do you get to the, you know, the outcome that you want. And I'm not saying that that's a wonderful happening, you know, that kids cheating like that is a great thing. It discourages me. And I would never tell one of my own children or any kid to go out and cheat, but I understand it. And I think it's incumbent upon us, especially now, to have a much bigger conversation about the reasons why kids are doing this and how to stop them from doing it, but not by punishing them if they get caught, but by, wait for it, asking better questions, doing more interesting work in the classroom that kids don't want it, that it's not, you know, it can't even be set up as cheating if they go and find answers. It's just part of the work. It's part of solving the problem that they want to solve. It's part of the question. And if it is a question that can be answered by Wolfram Alpha, go use Wolfram Alpha. If it's a question that you can, you know, call up your mate in Australia on a Skype call and get the answer to it, go get on Skype and do that. And so, you know, it's not just about Wolfram Alpha or Photomath. It's about, like, as Denmark has been experimenting with, why wouldn't we give kids open internet tests? I mean, I don't understand. I really don't understand why we wouldn't just open it up and say to them, use whatever tools or technologies that you can find to answer these questions.
But that's not realistic. But surely that, if you set it up like that, that's not realistic in terms of what life's like in the real world when you go into...
No, it's not.
When you've got a job, you don't have access.
You're right.
You're limited. You're sitting inside an office says, no, I don't want you to reach out to...
And
it's crazy.
You know, I know. And look, there are people, if they're still listening, who are you know, kind of getting upset right now. And, you know, I understand it. I get it. But this speaks to this whole different narrative that we are constantly harping on, that we cannot think of school in the way that we thought of it in the past. We live in a world of abundance now. And, you know, it's like if we are going to, here's another quote from somebody on one of our Change School conversations who said basically, and he said, you know, look, kids come to us and they tell us they just want to ace the test.
Yep.
They just want to ace the test. That's all they want to do. I won't say all, right? There are kids who want to learn, but you know what I'm saying. Most kids, most parents, what they look at is the grade. They just want to ace the test. But I love his response. Yep. He said, well, then we're going to change the test.
Yeah.
You know, and we're going to make the test something that you can't cheat on. You can't just memorize stuff for. We're going to make the test something where you actually have to do some interesting stuff that you can't look up. That, you know what I mean? That isn't formulaic. And I'm like going, that's not rocket science. Why wouldn't we now, when it's so plainly obvious that content recall is not what success is about in the world, not that it even ever was, but certainly there was more reason for it in the past than there is now. Why wouldn't we change it up? It's not rocket science, is it?
I mean, on that again, it was a quote from this article because I'm trying to just sort of, you know, that I think there's a lot in the article worth reading. It's a quote from David Helfand, who's a professor of astronomy at a Columbia University, reinforces your comment. The notion of education as a transfer of information from experts to novices and asking the novices to repeat that information, regurgitated on command as proof that they have learned it, is completely disconnected from the reality of 2017. I mean, say no more. And then you go to the big question is, well, then we go to one of our, you know, our most esteemed references, Papert, who was, by the way, a double PhD in mathematics. And have a look at some of what he said.
I'm sure he, by the way, I'm sure he cheated his way to that. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, and without Wolf and Alpha. And you look at some of his thinking around what we should be doing in the way, building an understanding of mathematics. He was deeply passionate about giving kids a mathematical understanding that was far more realistic, but far deeper than just simply regurgitating back tables. And what he was looking for was an understanding of the powerful ideas that underpin mathematics. And the one I always throw at people is the one around equivalence. I mean, we don't teach kids, you know, rational numbers or not particularly rational numbers, but fractions is the classic one. And a lot of the mathematics we teach kids in elementary grades, primary grades, is about basically trying to build an understanding of the idea of equivalence. Now, equivalence is the idea. That's what we're trying to do. We're not trying to get them to pout out 100, you know, fraction sums just for the sake of it. And so there are many, many, many ways in which we can use technology to simulate environments that allow kids to explore ideas. We can use it, obviously, and this is what Papert was attached to, was using things like Logo and other areas. But this is about building the understanding of equivalence. What are the powerful ideas that underpin mathematics? Because that's what matters. It doesn't matter whether someone can sprout back answers for the sake of it. What matters is that they understand that they are mathematically literate. And the phrase that I've always used is, we want them to think mathematically. That's our goal.
Right.
Now, if after 12 years of schooling, we have kids who have a passion for mathematics and think mathematically, that's as good as it gets. And that's what our focus should be, not on the regurgitation of, you know, thousands of sums for its own sake.
Right,
and I think it's really sad that we lose sight of that. And now that we have the tools to make that possible, to give kids who in the past have had difficulty finding these understandings, we can give them different entry points. We don't have to go through the teacher at the front barking at them with some ideas and them filling out worksheets as the only way that they can learn mathematics.
Well, I think I was getting some feedback there. Yeah, I'm still getting feedback, Bruce. So I'm going to, for those of you on Facebook Live, sorry about this, but I'll edit that out from the podcast. But, you know, again, I think that we struggle with this because the stance that we bring to the classroom is one of teaching. And that the shift to one of learning is where the biggest change is in terms of the conversations that we have of doing things differently in schools. And yet most people don't want to go there. How many schools have you been to that are trumpeting change, transformation, and all that type of stuff, and yet almost all the emphasis is on teaching better or on, you know, using technology to teach more effectively or whatever else? It just misses the whole conversation. And there's another quote in that article that I thought was really interesting. In fact, it's the last paragraph, and I'll just read one line of it, where it says, just as robotics has transformed manufacturing, tools like Wolfram Alpha are forcing us to rethink an educational system by challenging it to rise to the new technological standard. Rethink an educational system. And that's what I don't think most people get to that. I don't think most people who are in leadership positions, as much as they do want to move things and change things and make things more learner-centered and inquiry-based and all that type of stuff, I don't think they fully understand the implications of what we're talking about. Because this is, you know, as our little tagline suggest. It's required reimagination. It's a full rethink of what we do, and it's really trying to take traditional schools that have been around for a long, long time and help them on a journey where they, you know, get to a different place because the world demands it right now. So Wolfram Alpha is one example of the challenge that confronts us right now. But Wolfram Alpha is also one example of the opportunity that confronts us right now. And I just think somehow we're going to have to get to the point where we see those things. We see the internet. We see connections that we make in networks online. We see tools like those that we've talked about tonight. We see those as opportunities for kids to learn more deeply, more powerfully, to engage in more complex ideas, to create more beautiful things than by just resting on the stuff that they have in their memories and their brains and the very limited resources that physical space classrooms provide. I just don't know how that is sustainable any longer.
Well, I think it's interesting, Will, and I've got a couple of comments posted on our Facebook page that I'll link to in a minute from Rick and Beck, and good to see Brian Glover's there as well as a couple of other people. But
I'm shocked that Brian's there, actually. You know. he's Brian.
I think that that's the little worrying part, is that why would people, when we throw these ideas up, or, you know, we talk about change, it's interesting that people, sometimes their first response is to be defensive. Their second response is to be fearful. It's opportunity. I mean, the only way we're going to do this is for educational leaders, educators and teachers to, they're the people who are going to lead this. I mean, we're going to wait for the commercial world to tell us how this should happen, then glory be, you know, not only are we going to wait a long time, but it's going to be chaos. And if we haven't learned that already, then something's wrong. So it has to be educators who take the lead, and we're up for it. You know, we're up for it. We can do this if we take a positive view about it. Now, just to come back to posts we had on Facebook, Rick made the comment. He said, agreed, fluency is the key to using what you know, not regurgitation. And I like Beck's comment. She said, it would also be great if we can move the conversation from out now to learning.
That's the key.
Yeah, that is it. That's it. I mean, you know, that's what we've got to be looking to do.
And we are so saddled with the end result that we just don't honor the process at all.
No.
And, you know, learning is in the process. It's not, you know, acing the test. That's not learning. You know, we talk about this all the time. Kids who ace the test in June will not ace the test in September. They just won't.
Is that learning?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, if we are setting up outcomes-based education, you know, where we have these tangible things that we're looking for, and
yep.
I think it's just a false kind of way of a troublesome way, let's put it that way, of structuring our work in schools. There's no question about that.
So as we mentioned, both Stephen and Conrad speak about this and have different work in the area. Conrad actually is visiting Australia at the moment.
That's right.
Touch base with him very shortly, and with a bit of luck for viewers and listeners, we'll be able to have a chat with him and talk about this in some more detail in a couple of weeks.
That would be awesome.
It would be, and have a look at the work. We'll put the links to the work that he's doing. I know the first country, for instance, that embraced their ideas around the ways we should be using technology to allow kids to get a deeper understanding of more complex ideas in mathematics was Estonia. And for those people who are listening who are saying, number one, where is Estonia? And number two, what? Yes, I know. It's that small little country. I've actually been there and worked in Tallinn, which is the capital. If you're interested, just have a look at some of the work that's happening in that country, by the way, broadly across the whole country without labouring mathematics. Their prime minister or the president, I've forgotten, I think it's a prime minister, is a young bloke, a bit like Macron in France and Trudeau up in Canada, who realises that this isn't just an isolated you know, the use of technology isn't something we can isolate from the way we work and the way that governments work. And so they're making huge changes across the whole of government. And I might be speaking out of turn, but I've got a feeling they're moving to an online voting system. But there's an amazing amount of thinking going on in that country. So it was natural that they were one of the first countries that worked with Conrad in thinking about how could we rethink our teaching of mathematics in a digitally rich world.
And that's just, you know, one of very a growing number of stories where countries and provinces and districts are beginning to reimagine it, which I think is really exciting right now. I mean, I am more engaged in this work today than I was a couple of years ago, simply because I'm seeing finally people engaged in higher level, higher bar conversations around change. And that's really exciting. Is it happening at the speed I would like it to? No, because, you know, as who was it? Yulia, I think it was, on Facebook, said, you know, it's a foolproof system that nothing seems to be really able to change it. And I understand that sentiment, but I really am getting the sense that we are getting closer, at least, to a tipping point on the conversation that it's building out from education into parents, into governments. And that's exciting. That's really exciting. I do want to, we should probably finish up here. And I do want to just tell one more quick story that I heard this week. And I think it may have been in our cohort too, but someone was saying that their child came home and was not only learning the European countries and not only
you can't tell the story.
This not is- only learning the capitals of those countries, but they were also learning to recognize the countries based on cutouts so that they could, you know, I guess not have to use a map or go to Google Maps or, you know, I guess they'd have to recall Estonia, not just where it is, what it looks like and what the capital is from their memories. And that there was some very feverish studying going on about this that, you know, apparently was make or break or something. But, you know, you just listen to that. You just kind of go, seriously, we're committing to memory the outlines of Estonia as a country, as opposed to going out and doing interesting work and solving real problems and asking interesting questions and being curious and making stuff and having fun. I mean,
hey, Will, I'd get Italy. That's the boot.
That's the only one. I think I would get Sweden too, because I'm from Sweden. Well, I'm not, my mom is, but you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I could do okay with that stuff, but yeah, I couldn't have done okay when I was like in fourth grade, which is when apparently occurring, you know.
So just before you wrap, you know, just back to the point that Yulia made, this, I've just done our post for our newsletter this week in Shifting Conversations, which is a preview.
Wow, early. And, Bruce, way to go, buddy.
The post is this: why this time is different. And everyone's got to understand this isn't like, you know, wow, here we go. We're talking about changing schools and, you know, when's it ever going to happen? This time is different. And for a whole lot of very logical reasons. But the point about it is that we're not going to go back. It's not going to, you know, stay like this. The work we're doing in Change School, I think, inspires us to believe that there are so many people out there now who are working towards this change in school. And it's going to be something I think that people should get excited about and inspired about rather than fearful, because there's so much opportunity, as you said before, to be part of it.
Well, on that note, mate, I want to congratulate you on making this technology work finally. And I really want to say to those 8 or 9 people who are watching us on Facebook Live right now that you can turn in now. Thanks for waiting for 24 hours by the computer. We finally made it here. But hey, as always, Bruce, that was really fun.
That was fun.
Thanks for joining us on Facebook, either live or somewhere in the future in the recorded world. Thanks for listening to our podcast. Really appreciate it. And we will see you guys next week. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate. Talk to you next week.
Hey, thanks for listening. And don't forget to come back next week for another conversation between Bruce and me about high bar change in schools.
If you haven't read our latest white paper on the 8 attributes of modern educational leaders, you can head over to bit.ly/8ATTPOD and download it. And if you're really getting serious about change in schools and you're a leader who wants to learn how to do that and connect with all sorts of other people from around the world who are doing that, please visit us at change.school, where we're already taking signups for our third cohort that starts in September. So we hope to see you there as well. Have a great week, everyone, and thanks again for listening.